Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is intern pastor Tricia Mattson from Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in St. Paul. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. We give thanks to you, O Lord our God, with our whole hearts, and we glorify your name forever. Lord, we ask for your blessings on these, your legislative servants. During these long days, we ask you to bestow on them good health, energy, and wisdom. Protect them and grant them your peace and joy. Help them to pass just laws which serve the good of all people who reside in this great state. For your steadfast love, O Lord, extends to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Your righteousness is like the mighty mountains. Your judgments are like the great deep. You save humans and animals alike, O Lord. We trust in your promises that all people may take refuge in the shadow of your wings and feast on the abundance of your house. Blessed be the name of the Lord from this time on and forevermore. From the rising of the sun to its setting, the name of the Lord will be praised. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeCreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Kunin, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Spark, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, we're at this point going to recess given the Jobs Committee meeting which is going on. And then beyond that, we'd like to recess for an additional hour. So why don't let's recess until 1 hour after the conclusion of the Jobs Committee meeting. 1 hour after the conclusion of the Jobs Committee meeting. And members, Senate Republican members, at the conclusion of the Jobs Committee meeting, we want a caucus in room 318.
Senator Senjum moves to recess until 1 hour after the conclusion of the Jobs Committee meeting. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are in recess.
I'd like to impose the call of the Senate.
Senate is under call. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the first message.
This message is not on the agenda. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the adoption by the House of the following Senate concurrent resolution herewith returned. Senate concurrent resolution number 11, a Senate concurrent resolution relating to the delivery of bills to the governor after final adjournment. Elbert A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned. Senate file 1922, a bill for an act relating to state government. Elbert A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary will read the next message.
This message is not on the agenda. Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file, herewith returned Senate file 1754, a bill for an act relating to lawful gambling. Ellen A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which the amendments of the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 1694, a bill for an act relating to public safety. Senate file 1694 is herewith returned to the Senate. Ellen A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate concur in the amendments by House to Senate File 1694 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
To that motion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is the fireworks bill. It is the bill that, of course, I told you I wanted to send out here out of this Senate and get it signed by the governor as my final bill, something that I believe in and I think is a good thing to bring to Minnesota. It brings in tax money. It brings in jobs. In fact, members, there's been as many as five Wisconsin lobbyists trying to defeat this bill and one South Dakota lobbyist because we are sending our money someplace else. But, Madam President, members, we did amend the bill, and I'm going to read the amendments because there were some issues. So we're trying to solve the problems, and I don't think we can solve everyone's issues in this bill, but here's what we did. The cities had concern that we were preempting some of their rights to regulate things. So on page 3 after line 21, we put in this amendment. This section does not preempt a town or home rule charter city or statutory city from enacting and enforcing ordinances under the city charter or chapters 365, 368, 412, or 462 that regulate the conditions of use for aerial and audible devices and display fireworks. An ordinance to regulate use must be reasonable and must not prohibit all use in the jurisdiction except as provided in paragraph F. And then on page 3, line 24, after 412, we inserted paragraph D and went on to say, if a home rule, charter, or statutory city or town has enacted an ordinance, rule, or regulation under paragraph D, that ordinance, rule, or regulation prevails within the city or town. And then, Madam Chair and members, the key thing we put in this fireworks bill is we limited the time of sale to about a five-week period. And so we've got that in here, members. It says aerial and audible devices may only be sold or used in the state from June 1st to July 7th of any year. So, Madam President, members, I think we did good on this bill. We limited it to this time frame. But the key is we're opening the door to sell these devices and be able to legally use these devices in Minnesota that many folks are already using against the law. So we're opening the door. We're trying to keep it in a confined amount of time so that we have some control over it. But, Madam President, members, I believe that in Minnesota we're going to show folks that we are responsible with fireworks, that we're not going to give them to the kids, that we're not going to have accidents with them, and that in the future we'd be able to expand on this use. And I certainly hope that the governor gives this due consideration and that we can actually get this bill signed by the governor. And I stand for any further questions.
Members, it is a little noisy in here. Senator Jungbauer has explained the bill. Further discussion to motion to concur. Senator Jungbauer renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1684 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 1694 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1694, a bill for an act relating to public safety, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1694. all those senators having voted who desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 17 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under messages from the House, the Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file. Senate file number 1717, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry. There has been appointed to such committee on the part of the House, Lemire, Pepin, and Hosh. Senate file number 1717 is herewith returned to the Senate. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary, read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate file 506, a bill for an act relating to courts. There has been appointed to such committee on the part of the House, Szymanski, Mazarol, and Kath. Senate file number 506 is herewith returned to the Senate. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate file 946, a bill for an act relating to education. There has been appointed to such committee on the part of the House, Erickson, Biskins, and Greiling. Senate file 946 is herewith returned to the Senate. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
No Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of five members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate file 1573, a bill for an act relating to higher education. Has been appointed to such committee on the part of the House, Nornes, Banyan, Detmer, Vogel, and Mariani. Senate file number 1573 is herewith returned to the Senate. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There is no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File number 1750 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted Senate File 1750, a bill for an act relating to natural resources. Senate File 1750 is herewith returned to the Senate. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File number 2392 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted. Senate File number 2392, a bill for an act relating to liquor. Senate File number 2392 is herewith returned to the Senate. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary, read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File number 2164, a bill for an act relating to natural resources. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of five members be appointed thereon. McNamara, Anderson P., Heckbarth, Torkelson, and Dill have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File number 2164 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. Over where?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2164 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File number 2958, a bill for an act relating to finance. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of three members be appointed thereon. Holberg, McElfatrick, and Eakin have been appointed to such committee on the part of the House. House File number 2958 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. L.B. Namathowitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Roebling.
I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2958 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act like a conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary, read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the House it refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 1607, a bill for an act relating to the state capitol. The House respectfully requests that the conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Woodard, McDonald, and Loeffler have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 1607 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Methodist Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 1607 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the fifth order of business, reports of committee, the Secretary will read the additional reports.
Not on the agenda. Senator Michelle from the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth, to which was referred Senate File Number 2391, a bill for an act relating to stadiums, reports the same back with a recommendation the bill be amended as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert, and when so amended, the bill be reported and re-referred to the Committee on Finance without recommendation. Senator Roebling from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File Number 1832, a bill for an act relating to elections, reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass. Senator Roebling from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File Number 1983, a bill for an act relating to appropriations, reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass. Senator Roebling from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File Number 933, a bill for an act relating to state government, reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move to adopt the reports of the committees.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills on Senate File 1983, 933, and 1832. Second reading. Moving to the seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. They are printed at the bottom of page 3 on today's Senate agenda. Second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introduction and will be referred as indicated. First reading. Reverting back to messages from the House, the Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File Number 2398 and repassed that bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 2398, a bill for an act relating to agriculture. House File 2398 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam President. The ag bill has come back to us. I want to take this moment right at the start before I forget at the end and neglect to do so, but
Senator Magnus, you need to make a motion.
I will make a motion that we take up House File 2398, the conference committee
Senator
report.
Senator Magnus, how about if you move that the foregoing recommendation and conference committee reports on House File 2398 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee?
That's the motion I make, Madam President. I found the motion now.
Senator Magnus, to that motion.
You know, keep advising me here. I might stick around.
to that motion, members, no.
Well, let's not vote on that, Madam Chair. Let's not vote on that. Madam President and members, I again wanted to thank everyone that's helped with this, the members of the Ag Committee, the members certainly of our conference committee, Senator Scoy representing the minority party, and Senator Squade has done a great job all through putting this bill together. I really appreciate your efforts, Senator. Vice Chair Senator Deans is on the conference committee. Senator Rosen, as chair of the Energy Committee, certainly was a key player also with her support and efforts on the energy issues, which are extensive in the bill. And, of course, Senator Brown was there for us. Members, I think what I'll do is just highlight the changes in the bill, if that's right with you, Madam President and members. One of the changes that was made, leaving the floor, I know Senator Dibble, I don't see him here, but we did not keep the labeling for treated ground beef, the Senate provision. We did accept a dairy research authority from the House. Members, we had that in our bill moving forward, but since it created a board, it would have sent us to the State Gov Committee, and we would not have been able to make deadline. The House bill did not meet deadline, so it was vital that one of us was able to meet the deadline on the bill. And so we did remove that to meet deadline, but we added it back in since it was in the House provision. That provision, members, the University of Minnesota, our land-grant college, has a dairy program there. It's felt by the dairy industry and others in agriculture that we need to expand the research, dairy research capabilities here in the state of Minnesota. We are one of the largest dairy producers in the United States. And so we've looked at this for some years. A recommendation has come from the stakeholders that we pursue a private private-public partnership where we have private dairies get involved with the University of Minnesota and continue this non-bias research that is vital to the industry. It's disappointing, members, that in some land-grant colleges around the United States, they have dropped the dairy herds and the dairy much of their dairy research in their land-grant universities. Not a position that we wanted to be in. And again, we wanted to have a strong research program for dairy. So we've accepted the stakeholders' recommendations and are moving ahead with the Dairy Research Authority, again, a private-public partnership that we're hoping will help us down the road. We did make some changes in the biodiesel language. Members know that we do have a biodiesel mandate here in the state of Minnesota. There are some exemptions to the mandate. We did continue all of the exemptions in the current statutes, plus we added one where we exempt the Coast Guard fleet in the Great Lakes from the biodiesel mandate, and again extended those exemptions on for another 3 years. We initially had this as a two-year extension in here in the Senate language. We also extended the cold weather rules. We have ongoing national tests going on, as well as state tests here with the Biodiesel Task Force and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture looking at cold test rules. We've got lots of laboratory studies, but as we look at how we're going to move ahead in the timber industry and the mining industry and some areas in the northern part of the state, we want to make sure we have some real-world tests, see how those go. And we've also included in the language the requirement that after year one, we would have the parameters of the test and the outline set out, and then year two, conduct the test, and then in the third year, determine if the exemptions continue or what modifications sure. we do need to make. For the other biofuels language, I'd like to have the members know that something exciting will be happening later this summer. Minnesota will become the home of the world's first commercial isobutanol plant in the southwest in my area of the state. An exciting development for the state. We will be the first commercial isobutanol plant in the world. The second one will be built in South Dakota, and the third one will also be built here in Minnesota. Isobutanol is an exciting next-generation biofuel capable of being mixed with gasoline or diesel in gas or diesel engines. And it also can be used as paints, varnishes. One of the major items will be used is to make plastic bottles out of butanol, isobutanol, jet fuel, another item made from butanol, which is a diverse use of products from biobutanol, is that the sticky gummy stuff inside of your tires, the tubeless tires, is butanol, and that's what makes your tires airtight. So we've included language in that as part of the ethanol and biofuels language, where we extend three more years or 2 years also. As a result of the floods in 2010 in the southeast part of the states, there was some language in there that created a program that provided $200,000 for help for mental health cases of folks affected by the floods. It's turned out that, and with the help of Lutheran Social Services, who've done a great job servicing people that are facing these afflictions from natural disasters that take place, has come to us and asked that we expand that program using the same amount of money, but expanding the eligible counties as these natural disasters occur. And Madam President and members, it's important to know that Lutheran Social Services and others dealing with this issue find that sometimes it takes many months after a disaster hits before you have the need to get some help and seek some help. So we've included that provision from the House. Also, another provision from the House, it comes from Steele and Watonwan counties. They've asked to use bonding authority to construct buildings on their state, on their county fairgrounds. There's, again, no cost to the state. It's their money, their bonding monies, and we've accepted that provision from the House. We did, again, our bill has quite a bit in it pertaining to food safety. It's important to realize that the Federal Food and Drug Administration is going through major rulemaking changes. As they're doing that now and finishing that up, we're trying to match the state food regulations and statutes up with that. So other than that, Madam Chair and Madam President, I also wanted to make sure to thank Greg Knopf, our Senate analyst, Dan Mueller, his help. I want to thank the House members also and their staff. It's been a great pleasure to work with them. Certainly, we would be remiss in not extending our thanks to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the Commissioner Fredrickson, who's been a great champion for agriculture, continues to do so, and just a great person to work with, and his staff. And also the governor's staff, who's been involved heavily in a lot of these things. So with that, members, I will stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senator Magnus's motion. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And I want to rise to support the conference committee report. Senator Magnus and the conferees did a good job working for the Senate position. There were a few areas where the House prevailed, but generally I think the Senate did a good job withholding his position. I think we have a good bill, and I'd ask for your support. And I'd like to thank Senator Magnus for his work on this. I think real good for agriculture, particularly the renewable energy parts.
Further discussion on Senator Magnus's motion. Senator Magnus renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2398 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give House File 2398 its third reading.
House File Number 2398, a bill for an act relating to agriculture. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2398. All those senators having voted. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under messages from the House, the secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the conference committee on the House File Number 1974 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted House File 1974, a bill for an act relating to public employment. House File Number 1974 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendation and conference committee report on House File Number 1974 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam President and members. If you recall, we had a discussion on this. Just to give you a brief update here, under the current law, the terms of public employee contracts continue in effect beyond their expiration date if both parties agree. This bill says a contract term does not continue and is not enforceable after the expiration date, and there were two key parts to this bill. If it provides a wage increase to an employee, including cost of living, longevity, or performance merit, or number two, it provides an increase in employer-paid insurance benefits above the amount paid under the expired contract term. The conference report includes a limited version of the Senate's amendment to exempt essential employees. It exempts correctional employees, peace officers, and firefighters. The effect of this bill is limited to these specific contracts, contract terms, and all other terms would be extended for as long as both parties agree again. This is what we negotiated when we went and sat down with the House members. I can tell you that they were not interested in leaving in parts of it, but we worked hard to keep the Senate side inside this bill.
Discussion to Senator Perry's motion. Senator Perry renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 1974 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion does prevail. Secretary will give House File 1974 its third reading.
House File Number 1974, a bill for an act relating to public employment, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1974. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 30 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. Number 42, House File 2532, Senator Han. Number 52, House File 1134, Chamberlain. Number 79, Senate File 2403, Senator Limmer. And number 25, House File 2627, Senator Han. Members, a list has been sent out to each of your desks.
Four bills have been designated special orders. We'll begin with number 42 on general orders, House File 2532, Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, House File 2532 is a fairly brief bill. It has to do with the electronic prescribing for controlled substances. This is rapidly becoming the standard methodology for dealing with prescribing of drugs. In the legislature, this legislature in 2007 passed a law that essentially requires that electronic prescribing be done wherever possible. Congress, as part of the Medicare Modernization Act that was signed in 2003, established some incentives for the prescribers to actually adopt electronic prescribing. The problem is that Minnesota law does not require or still requires that paper prescriptions be used instead of electronic. And what this bill does is simply put Minnesota law in conformance with the federal law that permits the electronic prescribing of certain controlled substances. We believe that this is something that would be help improve the safety and ability to control the prescriptions. It is supported by the Pharmacists Association, the Board of Pharmacy. There's no opposition to this that I'm aware of, and I would encourage a green vote.
Further discussion on House File 2532. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 2532 its third reading.
House File Number 2532, a bill for an act relating to health, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2532. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 67 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 52 on the general orders calendar, House File 1134, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, pursuant to Rule 45, I move that an amendment made to House File 1134 by the Committee on Rules be stricken.
To that motion, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, they did some work on the bill over in the House, and it conforms to what the government and the Attorney General would like and the Department of Congress, so it is fitting to bring it forward.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, this is a bill that's a long time in coming. It's a consumer protection bill for annuities. House File 1134 is based on a model legislation drafted by state insurance commissioners, and it's been endorsed by Congress, and it's a result of the Dodd-Frank Act. The bill ensures consumers, especially seniors, purchase only those annuity products that are appropriate for their financial needs. This bill has the agreement and support of the Department of Commerce, and we have also included additional, I have an amendment here to offer that will satisfy the Attorney General as well. And Madam Chair, would now be the Madam President, now would be the proper time to offer that. It's A1 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain offers the A1 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Chamberlain moves to amend House File number 1134 as follows. Page 3, delete subdivision 8. This is the A1 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, what this does, it incorporates the three requests and recommendations from the Attorney General. Number one, it removes the definition of recommendation, so we now have a broad, very broad definition of that. It also, strengthened, they wanted the removal of the FINRA requirement, but what this bill does is strengthens that by requiring the insurers to still have oversight of the broker-dealers when they sell these annuity products. So that's basically it. And the bill itself just talks about review, supervision, training, and penalties for annuity products.
Discussion to the A1 amendment. Senator Chamberlain renews his motion the A1 amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on House File 1134. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I offer the A2 amendment.
Senator Nelson offers the A2 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Set.
Carlson on it.
And Senator Nelson, it says Carlson on it.
Senator Nelson.
Carlson Nelson.
Senator Nelson moves to amend House File number 1134 as follows. Page 1 after line 20, insert. This is the A2 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This amendment is regarding continuing education courses for those needed for your insurance license. Those of you who are licensed agents will be aware of this. For those who are not, this amendment specifically states what is considered a company sponsored course. Currently, our continuing education requirements require a certain amount of hours from company sponsored courses or from non-company sponsored courses. This amendment specifically defines what a company course is, and you can read that on line 1.21. A company course is a course that is restricted to producers of one or more companies or their affiliates.
Further discussion on the A2 amendment. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, I stand in support of this amendment. The language came from the Department of Commerce. It clarifies some issues for them, and it does not change the nature of the bill itself.
Further discussion on the A2. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I question whether this amendment is germane.
Advice? You don't have to. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. I believe that the annuity bill before us has a provision in there for 4 hours of continuing education before a licensed producer can sell these annuities. And so there's specific provisions in this bill about continuing education. So I would recommend that this is germane.
Senator Carlson, could you point out where in the bill the continuing education, we're looking through it right now, if you have it referenced quickly, that would be helpful.
Madam President.
Senator Chamberlain.
Looks like you'll find that on page, I believe, 6. I'm sorry, page 8. Madam President.
Senator Chamberlain.
Line 8.26.
The amendment is germane. Continued discussion on the A2 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Nelson renews her motion. The A2 amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on House File 1134. Senator Dames.
Madam President and members, I rise in support of this bill. This bill has been in the making, started last year, and I thank Senator Chamberlain for his hard work on this. I know that there's been a lot of hours spent with the Department of Commerce, the Attorney General's office, and input from the Governor's office. It's my understanding that all of the issues that those folks have had have been resolved. This is a very good bill, and this will provide Minnesota consumers as one of the strongest protections in the country against unsuitable annuity sales. And I think this is a vast improvement from the current statutes we have, and I would support a green vote.
Further discussion, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition to this amendment, this bill. I think the current law is much better for our senior citizens. The Attorney General's been successful in this state, more successful than other states, because we have better language. Other states haven't been able to protect the senior citizens like we have. And this will take some of those protections out. I think we should set the bar higher than other states and be a leader in the country. So the current version requires an electronic overview of the broker-initiated annuity. Also for the annuity that raises a flag that there might be some issues and why this isn't a good annuity for this person, it still allows the electronic review. Recommendation is, that was removed. And the FINRA provision that allows an exemption for insurance companies if the annuity is sold through a securities broker relieves the insurance company of the necessary accountability. So I encourage a no vote.
Senator Dames.
Madam Chair and members, I'll respectfully disagree with Senator Eaton. One of the requests that the Attorney General's office and the governor had was that we do increase the suitability provisions for seniors, and this bill certainly does that. It clearly requires insurers to conduct an elevated review for annuities being sold to the senior market. And this review requires more than what we had before. So I think that we're giving the seniors the protection that they need. It is broadening the suitability requirements when it comes to these annuities, and I think we need to support that. This will give us one of the strongest bills in the country, as I said earlier, for unsuitable annuity sales.
Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, I would also respectfully disagree with Senator Eaton. FINRA itself has been around since the 30s. It's been empowered by the Congress and by the SEC to have oversight on financial securities and these sort of obligations. It's been around a long time, and the broker-dealers fall under numerous laws and regulations, and they have to comply with them, including FINRA. But what this bill does, it adds another layer to that and requires that, and it explicitly says that the insurers, Madam President, have the ultimate responsibility to, of oversight of these, the sale of these annuity products. So this this is not loose. What we had before was simply two paragraphs, and it talked about suitability. This clearly lays out the requirements for training, supervision, review, elevated review, and penalties if they fail to comply. So this is very thorough. The AG has gone through it. The DOC has given his sign off, and they're happy with it. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Just a couple things that weren't said today that I think are important. This legislation is model legislation drafted by the state insurance commissioners, strongly endorsed by Congress in the Dodd-Frank reforms. Another point that members should know is that actually Minnesota is behind in terms of consumer protections for annuity purchases. 44 states have significantly more comprehensive suitability laws. So I would encourage a green vote on this bill.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam President. I think some of the other members just said a lot of the items I was going to say. I want to point out that, like Senator Nelson said, this is an NAIC. It started out, the foundation was an NAIC model bill. That's the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. That is the regulators. That is not the industry. That is not any other interest groups. That is the regulators. Our member to that national organization is our Department of Commerce commissioner. That's the regulator. This group came up with a model bill, which was the foundation of this bill. Then, of course, as you know, it doesn't mean you need to just take a model bill and pass that, rubber stamp that. What we did is we took that model, that national model, and then what Senator Chamberlain has done over the last year and a half is work with all of those different entities that he's been talking about to hammer out the difference, to make this a Minnesota bill, to raise the bar, not lower it, but raise the bar to our standards, and he's done that successfully. I want to thank Senator Chamberlain for carrying this. This issue was brought to the Commerce Committee at the beginning of the last session over a year ago, and it was Senator Chamberlain that grabbed the bull by the horns on this and wrestled with this issue, which is, it's not a glamorous issue. It deals with some pretty arcane pieces of law, and he crossed the T's, dotted the I's, worked with the groups, and came up with something that there's broad-based support for it. So members, I would encourage your support of this.
Further discussion on House File 1134.
Madam President.
I'm sorry, Senator Eaton. Thank you for...
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to point out that most people should have received a letter from the Governor and the Attorney General's office saying exactly the opposite of what has been said here on the floor. They do not agree with the current form of this bill, and the AARP, I do have a letter from them saying they support the changes that I listed earlier. The current law has strongly protected seniors purchasing insurance products since 2001, when Minnesota's current suitability standards were enacted.
This statute imposes liability upon insurance companies for practices that cause significant harm to seniors who lose their access to hard-earned retirement funds when they are transferred into unsuitable long-term deferred annuities and subject to steep surrender charges. This is what we are giving up by accepting the change in the law.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes, Madam President, Senator Eaton. The letter, I have the letter as well, and there are three items on the letter. And the first one, we can go through them. It talks about the elevated review in certain circumstances. That is in the bill now. If you look at the amendment as posted, that is in the bill. It addresses that specifically. We have removed, second part is number two, recommendations. They were concerned about being too tight on those recommendations. So we removed that definition of recommendation completely. So the amendment that I offered this morning, today, completely removes the definition of recommendation. And as I mentioned earlier, number three, the FINRA provision, that is still in the bill. But what we've done is we have made required insurers to be completely liable for the actions of those broker-dealers. So the insurers, the companies, are not off the hook. They maintain complete liability. So all three of those items have been incorporated into that amendment, are now part of this bill. Thank you.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, we talk about suitability and having a model for suitability. One of the main groups that we look at is the NAIC model, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, which is what this bill is modeled after. And it basically sets out guidelines so when a producer, an insurance agent, somebody's selling an annuity to somebody, that they have to make sure that they've taken care of some of the key components of making sure it's the right product for that customer. And that documentation verifies that. And right now, that is muddy water for this particular product. So by adopting this, there's a much clearer standard of what the expectations are. And I believe in the end, it really is another safeguard for the consumer, whether they're elderly or not.
Further discussion on House File 1134. Secretary will give House File 1134 its third reading.
House File Number 1134, a bill for an act relating to insurance, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1134. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Meeting on special orders, the next bill under consideration is number 79 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2403, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. This is the Data Practices Omnibus Bill, Senate File 2403. This particular bill is a collection of data privacy provisions. Most are what I would call technical in nature. They're involving grammar, definitions that needed to be tightened a little bit, and they're at the request of the Department of Administration's Information Policy Analysis Division. The provisions individually handle a number of technical definitions. Number one, it amends the definition of a responsible authority. Someone who at a political subdivision would be the responsible person to explain Data Privacy Act to individuals that may be requesting information. Also, we are combining different government entity obligations from many different sections of current law and putting them in one section. There's a definition of traveling data. That's data that travels from the judicial branch to perhaps a government entity. If there's a data classification, such as private data, that data provision has to follow the same from branch to branch of government, and it must not be altered. Security information is another definition. It requires the responsible authority that we talked about earlier to determine that disclosure would be likely to jeopardize the security of information on individuals or property that might be subject to theft or other improper uses. The other element is if a government entity denies data, it must provide a short description explaining the necessary or the necessity for such a classification, and it must make reference to the security information that I made mention of before. There are times when employees give suggestions, and that data that suggestion would involve sometimes involves the name or the telephone number of an employee, and that would be protected as well. Personnel data would be amended to expand just a little bit more to include the telephone number, the home address, and email of an employee of a contractor or subcontractor during business with a government entity. That too would be considered private data in its entirety. It does amend the law enforcement data statute to provide that investigative data that is inactive currently that would involve a person's financial account number or transaction numbers, they too would be considered private data. This would also amend the open meeting law to clarify that a 10-day web posting requirement for statewide bodies applies only to regular meetings. There was issues that if there was an emergency meeting, they wouldn't be allowed to have a 10-day notice, and that we would make an exception for that. The other area of law that this would amend is the Department of Natural Resource electronic licensing data, and that information would be kept private except for a legitimate business reason where a business owner, a fraud investigator, someone pursuing a debt could gain that information, but not in a mass list form, but individual items one at a time. I think I can stand for questions if there are any at this time.
Any further discussion on Senate File 2403? Seeing Senator Kielash?
Mr. Chair, I have the 850 amendment.
Senator Kielash offers the A50 amendment, A50. Secretary will report.
Senator Kielash moves to amend Senate file number 2403 as follows. Page 6, delete section 11 and insert. This is the A50 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Kielash.
Mr. President, Senator Lemon, what I've done is in the section 11, subdivision 19, you've kind of made an unworkable situation in many ways, because contractors report their prevailing wage information, including all the data on the name, address, phone number of the person, the craft that they're working on, so that we can check to see, you know, whether or not they're being paid. That information goes to the local unit of government, the MnDOT, or whoever is responsible for keeping track and enforcing those things. One of the problems with taking it off, I'm afraid, and I think it has as much to do with how procedurally, who's responsible for pulling that out of a public document and saying that you no longer can have the names, addresses of folks that are being paid the prevailing rate, is that how do you check to see if enforcement's being done? So what I've done is I've added subdivision B, which is just that any person for prevailing wage enforcement or compliance, maybe the data may be disclosed to them. So it just gives those folks that are responsible. We all know that there's not enough enforcement folks working for the state of Minnesota to make sure that contractors are paying the prevailing wage, and that too many of them are slipping through the cracks, and that folks that have been working on state-funded projects that were required to pay prevailing wage, many of them are not getting paid that rate, and there's no one there to check to make sure that it's being done. This allows that be taken care of, and that, in fact, enforcement takes place, and these folks get the wages that are required by state law, and that they have the opportunity to see somebody in regards to the prevailing wage requirements. So this is just a minor amendment that allows other folks that are in the enforcement business to make sure they have an opportunity to talk to these individuals and make sure that the wages they're being paid are the correct wages. And in many cases, it's just it can just be a bookkeeping error on the part of the contractor in order to pay the full rate. So I urge your support on this. It just makes it all work better.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Kelash yield for a question?
He will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Kelash, I'm trying to understand it. This seems like it's familiar language. I believe this language was omitted from the original bill when we considered it in the Judiciary Committee. If it wasn't part of the original bill, I think we considered this language, but we did not act on it. So is there an emergency of some sort or an urgency that we would need to consider this language at this time?
Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, one of the things that I'm not sure why the Subdivision 19 was added to this bill in the first place. My understanding is that was added, at least I was told a while back, so I don't know the different changes or where the changes came from in your bill, but that was added by the House, the language that makes employees from contractors that, you know, private data, so no one else knows about it. My question for you, Senator Limmer, is how, in fact, is this going to work? If MnDOT needs to know who these people are that are working as carpenters or 49ers or whatever, operating engineers, laborers, etc., how in the world they need the names and addresses in order for compliance. So who is responsible for taking their names off the public record? Is that MnDOT or that agency? And isn't there other folks, because state law allows for contractors that lost that contract to be able to say, to have a redress on some of this if somebody undermines their bids, then in fact you're not paying the prevailing wage rate. So there's a language that allows them to get compensated for losing the bid to somebody that's cheating the system. So I think this allows folks to check and make sure that there's enough enforcement folks out there to just make sure that the contractors are in compliance with state law.
Senator,
I don't know what. In response to your question about, I don't know if this was in your committee. I'm not on your committee, so I don't know where it came from exactly. If it was there and pulled out, I don't know why.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Kelash, I think you explained the A section of the bill, but the B portion regarding prevailing wage law enforcement or compliance. Could you explain that?
Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, yes. In many of these cases, contractors are paying workers from all over for the different trades and crafts, and sometimes they are paying the correct wages, so they're paying carpenters' wages, cement finishers' wages. Other times they're paying cement finishers' or carpenters' labor's wages for work, and there are, there are certain guidelines within the law that says you must pay according to the craft and the responsibilities of that craft. So if there is a person doing, I'll give you an example of a violation that happened a few years ago, and that is that on a bridge in rural county, there was 30 tons worth of steel tied on that particular project in 8 hours by an iron worker. Well, the iron workers know full well that it takes much longer to do that, but the only way they could find compliance is by going into the records and having someone say there was, in fact, 30 tons of steel delivered to that project and used in that project as required by MnDOT. So this gives other folks that understand the industry the opportunity to follow up with the folks that have been reported on and allows them to make sure that they're being paid the correct rates.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Kelash, if maybe I could get a better understanding of this. This is in regards to the Department of Labor and Industry. Are they concerned about this issue? And as a result, when contracts involve a prevailing wage, is this information that they have to have a little bit of a clearance for information regarding private data or what would be considered private data of name, telephone number, email address, that type of thing, so that they could at least open that up so that they could affect a prevailing wage contract? Is that what this is doing?
Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, Subdivision 19 does is it takes public data and says it is now private. That public data, it's on, anybody can look at the contracts and the reports coming back from a MnDOT project and say these guys were paid the prevailing wage accurately for the work that they were doing, that they were being paid iron workers' wages for iron workers, carpenters' wages for carpenters, and not that they were paid lesser amounts, say if they were laborers, or a greater amount if they were electricians, or that they're not using apprentices inappropriately on the project. All of those things can be checked, but you have to have the names and addresses on it in order to do it. By adding the subdivision 19, you've made that information private and unavailable to anybody who is interested in making sure that there's compliance with the state's prevailing wage laws. This adding this sentence just opens up to anybody that's interested in prevailing wage enforcement and make sure that the contractors are complying with state statutes. And as I said earlier, there's not enough folks in state government or even local government to make sure that this is done, and there's other folks that are interested in that, including other contractors that may have lost the bid. They want to make sure that they didn't get cheated out of the bid because somebody's cheating on the wage rates they're paying their employees.
Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've gotten a little sidebar advice on this particular amendment. I don't believe that this amendment promotes or dissuades a prevailing wage contract or the process of prevailing wage in Minnesota. It simply is streamlining an effort to work with people, contractors that are involved in prevailing wage in Minnesota, and that certain information in this bill we would be considered changing to private data, but for the purposes of moving information, there is an exception that's being asked for in this particular amendment. I believe that's correct. Is Senator Kielash, would you agree with my characterization of this amendment?
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. President, Senator Limmer, partially. Your amendment, the original subdivision 19, takes what is currently public and makes it private and unavailable to anybody that's interested in ensuring that contractors are in fact paying the prevailing wage. What you've done is you've said that, and because state statute requires the name, address, and craft that the contractor is paying, that still has to be on the report, on the prevailing wage reports. By making that private to anybody other than the reporting body, you've made it impossible for somebody who is also interested in making sure that prevailing wages report, such as a union or another contractor that got burnt and didn't get the contract, the ability to just even cross-reference and ask a question of whether or not the correct wages are being paid. What my amendment is doing is saying, fine, let's make it private, but it should be available for those folks that are interested in enforcement of the prevailing wage in the state. So it allows extra eyes out there, or those eyes that have a vested interest in making sure that the state's prevailing wage laws are enforced, have the opportunity to, in fact, cross-reference and cross-check and make sure that it's being done.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, I'm reading the last paragraph. It said data must be disclosed to a government entity or any person for prevailing wage law enforcement or compliance purposes. When it says any person, does that mean that it could be a person other than the employer? Could it be a union representative, a union organization of some sort that may not have a perhaps an employment relationship with the employer, someone on the side?
Senator Kielash.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, it's exactly that. But you have to realize that it is not just the entity that is doing the enforcement, the contracting state agency. It is also other folks that have prevailing wage interests, making sure that their members, if in the case of a union, are being competing on the right at the same rate that they're supposed to by complying with the state prevailing wage laws. It also means that a union that has a member that may or may not be getting paid the right rate or has changed, they would not be able to contact that person necessarily, not knowing that they're even on that site to find out whether or not they're working for the correct wage. And as you know, in many parts of the state, there are different wage rates, especially when you're in the highway heavy division. The rates in southwestern Minnesota are different than the metro or northern Minnesota, and that many of the members of these unions are working in these different parts of the state, and in fact, they may be getting a different wage rate for each part of the state they're living in and they're working in, and may not even know the exact rate because based on that, or a contractor may move from a lesser wage rates area and into a higher paying area and not adjust his wages accordingly. So those are the kinds of things that a union would be interested in. But there's other contractors that have, you know, someone that was involved in contracts and complaints and working with contractors in a variety of crafts and a variety of different construction areas, whether it be buildings or roads or bridges. I can tell you that contractors assume all their competitors that won the bid are cheating somehow on the prevailing wage rates. So, and there is language that says that, you know, they have a right, if somebody's cheating on it, they have a right to go after that contractor to make them whole for the project that they lost. So, I think Number one, I think the language in Subdivision 19 is unnecessary because it ought to be a public document. We're talking about expending public funds, and we need to be able to confirm that, in fact, those people really exist that the contractor is reporting on, and we need to be able to make sure that they're paid the correct rate. Instead of asking for a deletion of Subdivision 19, I just ask for a minor clause that allows folks that are involved in the compliance of prevailing wage the opportunity to talk to those employees to make sure that they're getting there, being able to identify them, and that these are not some ghost employees that are being reported to the state as well. So,
Senator Howell.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call vote on that as well.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Senator Howell.
Mr. President, I wish we had that much concern on the collection of this data as we are concerned about the enforcement and the compliance persons. I do have a concern, Mr. President, about any person here. There doesn't seem to be any person can ask for this information. And I'm going to offer an oral amendment at line 1.11 to delete "or any person."
Senator Howell offers an oral amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Howell moves to amend the Kelash Amendment to Senate File 2403 as follows. On page 1, line 1.11, delete "or any person."
To that, Senator Howell.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think that would still do what we're looking to do as far as the enforcement and the compliance person part of this. I think any legitimate organization that wants to come to the appropriate government entity to enforce or ask questions would be able to verify that information, and they could rely on the agency for that information. But I have real concerns about allowing any person that could just walk in and say, you know, I want this information, and it could be used for a lot of different purposes, and there's no qualifying other than I'm here to do it for enforcement. So I think this just tightens up the language, and I think it would still take care of the needs that that is proposed under this amendment.
Senator Kelash.
Yeah, I would oppose that because what it does is it says the amendment would read then, I believe is the way you had it written, the data must be disclosed to a government entity for prevailing wage law enforcement purposes. And the problem with that is that there's not enough government agency folks to be able to do this compliance. And there are other people that are interested other than just the government bodies that are involved in this prevailing wage enforcement. So it what it does is it guts that outside person that has a vested interest in making sure that his competition, the competition that the state says must be based on their ability to manage a project, not how much they pay their employees, that we have prevailing wage law so that local trades folks can compete with anybody based on the fact that they're paying taxes in the state, the local wage rates apply, and somebody can't come in and undermine them. So there's other people other than just the government unit that are interested. So I would oppose that oral amendment just because it guts the variability of other folks to be able to check on these prevailing wage things. This is a important thing to the state, to the state's building trades unions, and in fact to the state's contractors, that, you know, they want a level playing field. It's the state's responsibility and our responsibility to make sure that we've got a level playing field. And by gutting out those three words, you've taken out other folks that are interested in making sure we maintain that level playing field on construction wages. their ability to check and double check. It's not an intrusion. There has been no cases of abuse that I know of any of this information. It's pretty straightforward stuff. In fact, you know, the best would be to just eliminate the language of the subdivision 19. I would have no need for that any person in this bill. So.
Senator Howe.
I would oppose his...
thank you, Mr. Order. President. Seeing how there's not a willingness to compromise on this point, and this is a huge loophole in this statute here and this amendment, I'll withdraw my oral amendment since there's not a willingness to compromise on this issue, and we'll just vote on the original amendment. Thank you.
Senator Howe removes his oral amendment. Further discussion? Senator Kilash.
Mr. President, Senator Howe, it's not a willingness to compromise. What your three-word deletion does is gut the very point of what subdivision B is all about, and that is to allow folks that have interest in enforcing the prevailing wage laws in this state and ensuring that they're being enforced. You would prevent all of those folks from having access to the names and addresses of the very people that are being reported by these contractors that may or may not be reporting accurately or paying accurately. So,
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Kilash, I wish we would have been able to talk before the presentation today, despite the fact that the House may have a similar provision. It's difficult to have these type of conversations trying to understand a complex area of law. At this point, I would recommend voting no against the A50 amendment. We will be, if the bill passes, we will be forced to have this discussion in conference committee anyway.
Further discussion on Senate file, or excuse me, on the A50 amendment. Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 31 yeas and 36 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 2403, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce the A3 amendment. A3.
Senator Limmer introduces the A3 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 2403 as follows, page 1, line 21. This is Amendment A-3.
To the A-3 amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. The A-3 amendment is just a little bit of artful language to define how we handle county administrators or coordinators when it comes to the person of responsible authority that I mentioned earlier. Page 1, line 21, simply after the insert county coordinator or administrator, period. If the county does not employ a coordinator or administrator, the responsible party or authority is the, and then that would make reference to the county clerk. That's all that this does. It's just a technical line as it stands.
Further discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 2403. Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, since that last amendment didn't work for me, I would like to make an oral amendment to delete subdivision 19. This language.
Excuse me, just a minute. What page is that on, Senator?
On page 6.
Senator Kelash offers the oral amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Kelash moves to amend Senate File 2403 as follows. On page 6, delete subdivision 19.
To that oral amendment, Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, this changes our prevailing wage laws and reporting language that has been in place for decades now. It has been good. We've been able to make sure that contractors are paying the correct rate, that our employees and local contractors can compete based on the wages being paid, handcuffing our agencies, our unions, and other contractors that have a vested interest in whether or not this is being paid, the right wages are being paid, is still an important part of it. We have no indication that this data has been used for anything other than to have prevailing wage compliance. So, Mr. President, I move that that subdivision 19 on page 6 be removed, and I ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would have asked for a roll call vote, too, because in this particular element of the bill, we're trying to protect the privacy rights of our employees. This is data that's not only their name, this would be their address, their telephone number, and their email address. Now, not everyone is involved, like Senator Kelash's concern, with prevailing wage. But this would be taking out everything. This would be taking away every protection against an employee's home address, email address, or their telephone number. I suppose we can go down this path, but this is not specifically written for prevailing wage, Senator Kelash, and as a result of what you're doing, you're kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You will be making it available that it will not be considered private, the employee numbers, home numbers, addresses, and email of our state employees. I think that's wrong, and I urge all of our members to vote against the amendment.
Further discussing? Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll on the oral amendment. All senators voting who desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 31 yeas, 36 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 2403. Seeing none, secretary will give Senate File 2403 its third reading.
Senate File 2403, a bill for an act relating to data practices. Third reading.
Further discussion. Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, with this language in it that cripples the ability for enforcement of our prevailing wage laws, I just think this is a bad bill now and that it's going to be difficult for the governor to sign it. I would wish we could have adjusted the language. Senator Limmer, first, I had the ability My first amendment was to focus it on prevailing wage enforcement. You didn't like that, and then you complained in my second amendment that it includes everybody, that it was much broader than that. So my effort to narrowly focus it on prevailing wage reporting forms, you know, that was my effort at compromising, trying to make sure it allowed for what you're saying. With this in the bill, with this tough vote for anybody that supports the building construction trades and prevailing wage in this state, I just think the whole bill should go down.
Further discussion. Seeing none, secretary will take the roll. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 30 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next is number 25, House File 2627, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the amendment made to House File 2627 by the Committee on Rules and Administration and the report adopted April 18, 2012, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
To that motion, all in favor, before that, Senator Hand, could you explain it just a little bit?
Mr. President and members, this allows us to take up the House file, the House version, the bill that the companion is a single bill, and the House has added a couple of other bills to it, and so we want to take up the House language.
To the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this is a Health and Human Services policy bill. It includes most of the provisions are things that were passed as part of our omnibus bill last session. There were a couple things that the House has added on the floor that are included in the bill, and I just will briefly describe what this is. There are three sections. The first one is a health care section. The first part of that, Section 1, is a Senator Marty bill dealing with the e-prescribing requirements that could be delayed if they are two or fewer practicing physicians. Section 2 is a bill that Representative Gowald and I authored. There is an amendment that we put on that has to do with how the electronic communications are done, and I understand that there is an amendment that Senator Lori has that we will get to when we get completed with the bill or the description of it. Section 3 is a provision that has to do with the reporting of medical assistance participants to health plans. There is an amendment to change that provision, but it's language that has been agreed on by the plans and the department. Article 2 has to do with human services provisions. Section 1 is a Senator Hall and Representative at the time, Representative Hayden provision that is requested by Hennepin County. It allows for local agencies to negotiate a supplemental agreement with a vendor for residential services. Section 2 is an MFIP provision that has some language that was proposed by MICA. I think this is matching the language on Senator Benson's Senate File 1675. Section 7 of the bill, Article 2, is a Senator Ortman provision dealing with the reciprocal support for agreement with Bermuda. I believe we did pass this in another bill earlier this session. Article 3 of the bill, Disability Services, has some sections 1 through 3, long-term care imperative language. I don't believe that this is controversial, and I believe there is a version of this language in the Health and Human Services Finance Bill that we will be taking up soon. Article 4 is a Department of Health provision that is a bill that is a Senator Higgins' bill with respect to the pools. This is language also in the finance bill, so it is a little bit duplicative. But that is the content of the bill, and I would like to, Mr. President, to offer the A8 amendment.
Senator Hand offers the A8 amendment. Secretary will report. Senator Hand, we have an A7. Could that be it?
Mr. President, the A7 has been superseded by the A8. The A8 is a slightly modified version of the A7.
Secretary will report the A8 amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend House File 2627 as follows. Page 4, delete Section 3 and insert. This is Amendment A-8.
To that amendment, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this is a provision that the UCARE in particular, but the health plans have asked for that would provide some clarification for the coverage dates for people who are on the state public programs. The language was modified by the department and has been agreed upon by both parties, and I would urge your acceptance of this amendment.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do not have any further amendments. I do want to point out that this bill was passed in the other body by a wide margin. I believe they had 114 votes, bipartisan support. I do know that Senator Lurie has a provision that affects Section 2 of Article 1 that he and I have had some conversation about, and I would like to ask him to see if he would want to propose that amendment.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do offer the A6 amendment.
Senator Lurie offers the A6 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Lurie moves to amend House File 2627 as follows. Page 3, line 8. This is Amendment A-6.
To the amendment, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is really a technical amendment. It accomplishes the same goal as Section 2 had previously. It just does it in a little bit more elegant manner, putting for a drug claim, there is an electronic acknowledgement required, and there always has been. This was initially to exempt prescription drugs because they're a real-time transaction and they send a remittance immediately upon getting the claim. And so requiring an acknowledgement in that sense made them stop to send an acknowledgement and then a separate remittance. This just lists that the remittance that is sent for a drug claim, a NCPDP standard, meets the requirements of an electronic acknowledgement for those drug claims. And everybody has signed off on this, a very large group of individuals, the plans, the pharmaceuticals, the pharmaceutical benefits managers, and the Department of Health. And so this will bring the bill into shape for that one little section.
Further discussion? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an amendment that Senator and I have talked about and has been vetted and compromise has reached and everybody's in agreement, so I would certainly accept the amendment.
Further discussion? On the A6, Laurie Amendment. Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President, members. Mr. President, members, for many years now, we've known that being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender is a perfectly normal and natural expression of being human. Not indicative of anything negative or out of the order for anyone, which may not square with some folks' religious points of view, which is fine because this is a free country and people can believe whatever they want. However, when all of the leading professional organizations agree unanimously and unequivocally that LGBT folks are perfectly normal and healthy, whether that be the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, American Counseling Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American School Counselors Association, the National Association of Social Workers, and they speak out that any attempt to portray otherwise in efforts to treat, cure, repair, convert people is not only not effective, it is actively harmful, leading to mental health issues, emotional issues, and even worse. We have known that some irresponsible counselors under the guise of professional help persist in trying to change people, which is ridiculous. Think about yourselves, members. If someone tried to change you from being straight to gay, you'd laugh. But it has come home this past year, illustrated in fairly stark relief, that religious counseling masquerading as objective, scientifically based help persists even here in Minnesota. These are these clinics that are purported to pray the gay away. What's especially galling and problematic is that these clinics are eligible for Medicaid reimbursement. So taxpayers are paying for what amounts to religious instruction and treatment that actively harms otherwise perfectly normal and healthy people. So, Mr. President, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble offers the A1 amendment.
Mr. President, members, the A1 amendment simply says...
Just a minute, Senator Dibble. Just 1 minute. Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend House File 2627 as follows. Page 4 after line 14, insert. This is Amendment A-1.
To that, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a simple amendment. It corresponds to my Senate file 1987, introduced a number of months ago. Two separate hearing requests, which were met with silence. It simply says that reparative therapy or conversion therapy is not covered as a Medicaid-eligible reimbursement.
Further discussion on the
Mr. President, I would request a roll call vote on this amendment.
Roll call requested and granted. Further discussion on the A1 amendment, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. And members, I would urge the rejection of the A1 amendment. This is a bill that is not intended to be a controversial bill. It does not deal with any particular forms of therapy. And so, members, I would just urge that you not accept the A1 amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Dibble yield for a question?
Senator Dibble will yield.
Senator Dibble, I assume by the handout that you have that your feeling is that the power of Jesus Christ doesn't have the power to redeem anyone. How would you respond to that?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. President, I absolutely believe that that is true, that the power of Jesus Christ does have the power to redeem someone.
Further discussion on the A1? Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll.
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. They're with 27 ayes and 40 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on House File 2627. Secretary will give House File 2627 its third reading.
House File 2627, a bill for an act relating to human services, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2627. Fischbach votes aye. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to messages from the House, the secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 2294 and repass said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 2294, a bill for an act relating to state government, making adjustments to Health and Human Services appropriations. House File 2294 is herewith transmitted to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2294 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is the conference committee report on the Health and Human Services finance bill. We had this in our body a week or so ago. When it left the body, there was a larger bill in terms of the dollars that were in it and did have provisions that are no longer in the bill. And I do want to very briefly talk about what you have in front of you. You do have a spreadsheet that shows the financial implication. It does look a little bit odd because it shows that in the current biennium there's a negative number. And all we're doing there is recognizing that while this bill actually spends from all funds about $18.1 million, there is a $35 million receipt due to the return of funds from the 1% cap that the HMO has provided to the state. And so the net effect shows a savings, but this bill is spending slightly over $18 million in the current biennium. It also is spending about $23.4 million in the tails. So the financial provisions in the bill are noted in the spreadsheet. I do want to talk a little bit about what is in the bill and what is causing that, and also what is not in the bill. There are several important provisions that are not huge in terms of cost, but I think are significant. One thing that we're doing is we're delaying the relative PCA reduction that was part of the finance bill that came to the legislature last year. As many members know, that was a provision that was had some controversy attached to it, and there was a lot of concern about maybe we need to address that or try to do something about that. So we do have a provision that spends one-time money that delays that and also calls on the Department of Human Services to do some more investigation into the relative PCA program to make sure that going forward that we have a program that is going to work and will continue to serve the needs that it addresses. The second thing that we do in the bill is we restore the emergency medical assistance provisions that help those with cancer and dialysis. This again was a part of the bill that was passed last year, and concerns were raised about how that was affecting various individuals, and so there was a desire to try to address that by restoring the funding for that. And this also is a one-time expenditure of money with a request for the department to look again at the emergency medical assistance program going forward to see if there are ways that we can do that more effectively. There is a provision that is about slightly under $1 million for the essential community support grants. This was part of the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. We also have a provision that addresses the 10% congregate living low needs rate reduction that was a part of last year's bill. It reduces it to 5% contingent upon receipt of federal waivers. So there is no money in the bill to address that provision, but there is language that says that if we are given the federal waiver, that, the initial money would be used to offset that 10% to a 5% rate reduction. Other provisions in the bill, Senator Brown's Senate File 2372, which deals with the contingent rate cut repeal in the long-term care provider payment shift. We had in the bill last year some language that would have provided a repeal of that was contingent upon the acceptance of a federal grant, and that grant has not been received yet by the state, and so it's put some of the providers at risk And so this provision is, frankly, a temporary expedient that everyone believes that we will get this federal grant, and so this will be addressed as it may happen. But because we're unsure of when that will occur, there's about $22 million, that's mostly what the TAILS amounts to, that allows for us to financially track that shift and make sure that those providers do not get put into a severe financial straits if that federal grant is not forthcoming quickly. We also have in this bill, Senate File 2013, which is Senator Lori's licensing moratorium exception provision. We have Senate File 2204, Senator Rosen's critical access nursing facility designation provision, Senate File 2212, another Senator Rosen provision, nursing facility construction moratorium. So was a provision also supported by the long-term care imperative. Senate File 1704, Senator Hoffman's assisted living consultation changes. This was amended in the conference committee. This had to do with the provisions in last year's bill that required consultation before entering into a long-term care situation, and that was amended and compromised. Senate File 2203, another Senator Rosen bill dealing with nursing facility certification changes, part of some reform efforts that Senator Rosen has been working on for a number of months. Senate File 726, Senator Sharon has a provision that deals with the medical assistance EPD asset limit modification. That is in the bill. Senate File 1699, Senator Nino has an adult foster home reform that it was asked to be considered by ARM. A number of provisions in that section of the bill that were supported by ARM. Senate File 2110, Senator Ingebrigtsen has a critical access dental reimbursement provision, which is in this bill. Senate File 1543, Senator Rosen has some a provision for MA coverage for community paramedics. Senate File 164, Senator Olson, this is a provision that allows for general assistance earned income savings account to be raised to, I believe, $500 a month, and the savings account disregard from $1,000 to $2,000. Also in the bill, Senate File 2157, Senator Rosen's CCAP absent day limit exception, again dealing with the provision that was in last year's bill. This modifies those provisions somewhat to allow for more absent days to be used by certain individuals with children and who are also trying to finish their education. Senate File 1674, Senator Benson's EBT card requirement modification provision. Senate File 1877, Senator Hoffman's welfare fraud provision. Senate File 284, Senator Fishbach's radiation therapy facility moratorium, which also has moved separately in this body, but there is a financial cost to that, a study involved that is in this bill as well. Senate File 1809, which was a provision that I had dealing with hospital community benefit modifications, which I also believe was passed separately in this body. Senate File 2147, another Senator Benson provision, Rule 25 assessments. Senate File 1824, Senator Nienau's provision on HMO transparency that he has worked on this session. It was modified slightly in conference committee with Representative Gottwald. Senate File 2440, Senator Higgins' Minneapolis Weber Pool Project is in this provision. Twice in one day, Senator Higgins, you win the prize. Senate File 1165, Senator Nienau's early childhood intervention criteria modification. We have also in this bill a study of managed care, asking the question for the department to contract with an outside vendor to look at how we do managed care in the state and to see if there are things that we can do better or differently. This is actually a part of the concern raised about transparency and accountability for the HMOs. So there is a study provision in this bill. We have an autism with housing support study, part of a bill that Senator Senjum had. This was a modification of that provision. There's an emergency medical services regulatory board provision that I believe Senator Vandeveer had that provided some money to do studies of how emergency responders deal with accidents on freeways. What other provisions? I guess there are more, but a couple of things that I want to mention that were in the bill when it left this body that are not in the bill. Some of those were a little bit controversial. We did have the nurse licensure compact provision in the bill in the Senate when it left the floor. That has been removed in conference. That bill is traveling, that Senator Gerlach's bill is traveling separately. There's also provision in this bill for PEEP, the moratorium on PEEP that I had a provision for that has moved, it was part of this bill when it left the Senate, is no longer in the bill. See if there was, I thought there was another. I think that may be the things that were the most controversial in the bill. Oh, there was a Rule 101 provision, too, as well, that we had in the Senate version to repeal Rule 101. That also has been removed. There is a, in the study of managed care language, that would ask for that study to include a study of the Rule 101 as it applies to the HMOs to be looked at as part of that study. And so, members, that is the content of the bill. We think it is a good bill. In the conference committee, Commissioner Jessen was there and expressed support for the work that the committee had done. And while she could not speak for Governor Dayton, did indicate that she would recommend to the governor that he consider very strongly the adoption of this bill. It was passed by the other body earlier today on a vote of 128-2. With four members who either were not there or did not vote. So, members, I would urge your support for the bill. This is a good bill. It does some things that we believe need to get done this year, some things that I think are of critical importance to many of the most needy folks in our society, our state, and I would ask for your support and a green vote. Thank you.
Senator Skoy? You were waving at me earlier, and I thought... I'm sorry. Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Madam President. I would rise in support of the Senator Hand motion to accept the conference committee report on House File 2294. I want to thank Senator Hand for including me in this conference committee. I thought it was a really excellent process. I will note that when this bill was initially on the Senate floor, there were a number of members who did not vote for the bill in the shape when it left, but Senator Hand made note of the fact that there were some problematic provisions in the bill when it left and committed to working on those in conference committee, and he lived up to that obligation. We worked very, very hard on this conference committee. He mentioned that Commissioner Rothman, he mentioned Commissioner Jessen from the Department of Human Services was well engaged and worked hard with us. In addition, Commissioner Rothman from the Department of Commerce came and testified a couple of times and is supportive of what we've done in the bill. Commissioner Ellinger was also engaged in the process, and I think that what we have is a very good bill worthy of everyone's support. The pieces that were cleaned up from the bill are the Nurse Licensure Compact, the PEEP moratorium, the HMO Rule 101, provision, removal of the HMOs from the state's Rule 101 requirement. All of those have been removed. In addition, there was HMO regulatory authority, transfer of that authority from the Commissioner of Health to the Commissioner of Commerce. That was a little bit controversial and was removed from the bill as well. I think that it has been cleaned up very, very well. And as was also covered by Senator Hand, the spending provisions in this bill, while they were they are less than when it left the Senate floor, we had a target once we got to conference committee, and we did the very best that we could and met the very most urgent needs of the people of Minnesota. The 20% wage cut for relative PCAs is delayed. The emergency medical assistance for kidney dialysis and chemotherapy is restored. The adult foster care and group homes provision, where beds would become decertified if these homes were successful in integrating one of their clients into the community and would essentially destabilize that home, that provision has been fixed substantially. It's been put off a ways, and there's also a certification process, a voluntary certification process for these homes to indicate that they are good at serving people with mental illnesses, and if they fall within this certification, they will not have those beds decertified as well. The medical assistance for employed persons with disability, allowing that to continue past age 65. This was a big priority of the governor, and I know Senator Sharon worked very, very hard on that. We are very proud to be able to bring that forward out of the conference committee process. and the fix of the contingent rate cut for the congregate living homes of 1.67% was another very, very high priority item. I would encourage all members to vote for this bill and really do thank Senator Hahn and the staff who worked very, very diligently and served our conference committee very well. I know we finished up late Friday night and they stayed here all weekend and got this bill ready for us to sign yesterday, and I'm very happy to have this on the Senate floor today, and again would encourage members' support.
Senator Hahn, I do have a list, so I don't know if you were wanting to look at wrap-up, Senator Hahn, but I've got a list. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Hahn yield for a question, please?
Senator Hahn, will you yield? Senator Hahn will yield. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I don't know where it is in the conference committee report. I don't see anything on the spreadsheet in just a simple perusal of it, but I do see on the for the bill review that's provided by our caucus staff provision that says the legislative auditor must contract with an audit firm to conduct a biennial independent third-party financial audit of the information required to be provided by managed care and county-based purchasing plans. You know, I wonder if you would explain that a little bit more, and if you would tell us about the conversations you had with the Legislative Audit Commission with regard to that provision and or with the legislative auditor himself, and if there is an appropriation in the bill to cover that, or if not, which audits that the legislative auditor currently does that are under the jurisdiction of the Legislative Audit Commission do you think ought to be set aside in order to do this one?
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Rest. And I certainly would invite Senator Eno to make any comments. This was a provision that he had introduced, and there was a considerable discussion about it. The House had a provision that was similar that Representative Gottwald carried, and there was some modifications to it in conference. However, prior to that, we did have some discussion with Jim Nobles, the legislative auditor. The funds that are in the bill would be appropriated to the auditor to do this. He's asked in the language of the bill to contract with an auditor as specified in the language of the bill to make sure that there is some independence brought to the scrutiny of the plans. This, as you probably know, has been somewhat of a debate going on around here and around the state in the last few weeks, and I think there is a concern on the part of everybody to make sure that the plans are doing the job we expect them to do and that the public has confidence in them. Mr. Nobles indicated that the language was sufficient for his needs to do that, and that we are providing him the funds in the bill to make sure that he can conduct those audits. I think the total was something slightly under $2 million in total for the audit processes that are called for in the bill. There's actually two. One is an audit of the plans, another is an audit of some protocols that the department is asked to develop in prior to those audits. So I don't know if Senator Nino, do you want to address further the provisions of this or not, but he's probably a little bit more knowledgeable about that than I am.
Well, Senator Madam Rest. President, my question is not about the merits of the audit, but just how the Legislative Audit Commission should be. We really appreciate the courtesy of being consulted when the Legislative Auditor's Office is asked to do something outside of the scope of their regular duties. We have on occasion had regular bills that direct them to do things to the point where, in the past at least, where they're then unable to do the work that's directed and serve on that. So you know the work that the Legislative Audit Commission asked them to do. So when there is a requirement, not merely a request like we have in the Sunset Commission,
I think members of the body and members of the Legislative Audit Commission need to pay particular attention. We do know how well-respected representatives and senators, how in what high regard the legislative auditor is held, but they only have so much capacity to do important things, and we try in a very deliberative way, and I know that you're aware of this, to make sure that they have the resources to do the work that the legislature wishes them to do, and we get nervous when we start piling on. So I know that this has been written about, discussed. It's very important. I just want to make sure that the body recognizes that, and in general, you know, please don't put these kind of requirements in legislation as opposed to bringing them to the Legislative Audit Commission. I have no problem with the actual audit because I think it's extremely important that it be completed.
Madam President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Rust, I appreciate your comments, and I believe you make a good point. I think the authors of the bill in the House and the Senate probably could have reached out to the Audit Commission in general. I think this provision changed over time. Initially, the requirement was for the commissioner to be the contractor of the outside auditor, and in the course of the development of the bill, it was thought that because of the respect that the legislature holds for Mr. Nobles, that they would ask him to be the contractor. He is not going to perform the audit. His staff is not going to perform the audit, but he is going to be the contracting agent and with the money that the bill provides. So I think you make a good point. I think it's fair. I just would, I guess, encourage in the future that people who have bills that are, would ask the auditor to do it to perhaps consult with the Audit Commission, but it's a point well taken. But I don't believe, and in talking with Mr. Nobles, he did not believe that it was going to place any undue burden on him or his staff to serve as that contracting agent. And it does give, I think, the legislature some comfort, if you will, that this is going to be done in a, an appropriate manner.
Yes. Senator Rosen. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam President. I, too, rise in strong support of this bill, and it's a pleasure to rise in strong support of a Health and Human Services bill. We don't get many of those, but I don't want to say too much about the chair hand's work on this and the committee members because we have to live with them, and he might get out of, you know, a little big for his britches. But he did a very good job along with members of the committee, and I feel it's really important to stress a few things that I find very important, all of us should find very important. That has to do with the long-term care industry out there. They're in a crisis mode right now, and we are trying to do some take some steps to adjust and make them profitable, especially some of the long-term care facilities out in greater Minnesota and some of the small areas. And I'd like to just do send a strong shout-out thank you to the Department of Human Services. They have taken this issue very seriously also, and that are taking the steps to address these, listen to the concerns, and make adjustments appropriate. And some of those adjustments are in this bill. I also want to say that Senator Hahn and his staff came down to Waseca, to one of the larger nursing homes there, and we had a very good meeting. He spent about 3 hours with the folks, and the Department of Human Services then had a series of hearings throughout the state, one in Waseca, Alexandria, and New Hope, and really listened to the concerns of the administrators from the assisted living centers and the nursing homes. So some of the pieces that we came up with that address these long-term care issues is the release of the mandatory Medicare certification. That's an option for some of these smaller nursing homes, and also the critical access nursing home language and appropriation that's in the bill. It's one of the first in the nation. I know it's not a lot of money, but I did hopefully get a commitment out of Senator Hand that we will continue to fund this pilot project to give these options to these smaller nursing facilities that do more of a pay-for-performance in their facilities, and they can get a rate adjustment and have some flexibility in some of the rules and regulations. So I just like to, again, thank Senator Hahn and the members that have served on this committee. I think we did a good job with this bill.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I want to rise in support of the bill as well. And because people are talking about the accomplishments within it, I want to thank Senator Han. There is a bill in here that is of particular interest to me. It's called the Medical Assistance for Employed Persons with Disability. This is a bill that this legislature has been trying to address for over 6 years. And it was in our bill last year, but we weren't able to get it through. And this year, because of some money becoming available as a result of the money coming back from the HMOs, we've been able to find a way to fund this. This is a critically important program among many that we're going to have to confront, because we need to take a look at what's happening to our disability community as they move into retirement. And how can we keep them in their homes in lower cost care within the state on these programs that do not necessarily, once they change to age 65, support community-based services. And I also want to applaud our committee and the legislature, Senator Han and Senator Lori. I've been working on a non-emergency medical transportation for a number of years. We had an advisory commission that met over the summer months trying to figure out how to best resolve many complex issues. Many of you remember the fights we have had about how to reimburse that, whether it should be a how do you go about determining whether somebody's eligible for special transportation, all those critical issues about how to support medical transportation for disabled persons. And in this bill, we are going to continue to work on that and make certain that we have not only supportive services for persons with disability that need medical transportation, but that we do it in a way that's responsible to the taxpayers. So thank you very much.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Han yield for a question?
Senator Han will yield. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you. Senator Han, recently I've been reading about that money that we received from the UCARE donation is now to be split between Minnesota and the feds, and I'm wondering if you could tell me, does that affect what we're able to do this year in this biennium, and is there anything else you can say about the process that is currently underway with regard to this and your expectation of how this may affect us going forward?
Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Bonoff, I can tell you what I know, which may not be the entire story, but as many people know, there was an agreement last year that the plans agreed to. It was never in statute, but it was an agreement to return to the state any revenues that they received from the state that were in excess of 1% above their costs. I'm not quite sure how to phrase that. I don't want to say profits, because these are nonprofit organizations, but there was an agreement. And as a result of that agreement, about $73 million was returned to the state a couple of weeks ago. And because of the nature of the funding that we get from the federal government, the expectation is that some portion of it, and my understanding is it's about half, is money that would have to return to the federal government, since that was money that originally came from the federal government as Medicaid payments. And so we have shown in our bill the receipt of about half of that. I think it's about somewhat over $35 million that has come into the bill, into the Treasury, into the general fund. We are spending about $18 million in all funds. Some of that is TANF refinance money. Some of it is that money that came from the HMO return. But the rest of those dollars are going to fall to the bottom line, where they will be unless they are spent by the legislature in some other way, which still remains to be seen. Going forward, I guess I don't know for sure if this 1% cap is something that is going to stay in place. I think, frankly, in my opinion, there is a need to look at the structure. Maybe we need to create some kind of modification of the risk structure that we ask the plans to participate in. It's one of the things I hope that would be accomplished in the study of managed care that we've asked for in the bill. And so going forward, I think we may need to do some things to make sure that the people of the state of Minnesota have high confidence that what we're doing is right, that it is appropriate, and that it is using money wisely, and that we're accomplishing the goals that we all wish to have. So I can't predict the future of whether this cap structure is going to stay in place, but at this point, I think that the money has been accounted for. I know there's some continuing questions and appropriate questions being asked at the federal level to make sure that nothing was done that shouldn't have been done. We were involved, frankly, in a I think, a healthy and appropriate debate with the federal government last year as a result of some $30 million that was returned by UCARE, a donation they called it, and we were arguing very strenuously to retain all $30 million of those dollars. But I think as a result of the 1% return, that $30 million plus an additional $8 from UCARE was a part of that, and so the $30 million that we got last year, about half of that will also be returned to the federal government, I learned yesterday. So that's what I know. It's probably not complete, but that's what I understand is going on right now.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam President. Well, Senator Hanna, I was asking specifically about the half of the money that was going to be returned from the UCARE $30 million, so I just wondered how that affected anything that we had already made commitments to spend that money on. It sounds like it's not affected in this bill, and I just want to make sure that there weren't any other things that we didn't know about in terms of the effect of that money no longer being in Minnesota.
Further discussion on the Hanna motion, or Hanna motion. Seeing none, Senator Hanna renews his motion.
Madam President, I'm sorry. It was a follow-up question. I was asking Senator
Hanna. Waved off, but Senator Hanna.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Bonoff, to your question, there is no ongoing issue that I'm aware of with respect to the money that was returned to the state as a result of the UCARE donation and the 1%. The budget is not in jeopardy. There are no holes in the budget as a result of this. In fact, we've got, as I indicated, some surplus as a result of that, but there are no ongoing issues financially. And, Madam President, before I allow you to proceed with the process here, I do want to recognize the members of the conference committee, Senator Lori, Senator Rosen, Senator Ninau, who else have we got, who am I missing here, Senator Benson. We had a very good committee. I think we worked well with the members of the other body and their committee. We had a very good staff, and want to recognize them, Mr. Lobeco, Ms. White, Ms. Cavanaugh, and Mr. Albrecht, and my staff, Brad Beers and Andy Eilers. This was a very good process. It took us, I believe, a total of 3 meetings. I don't even know how many hours it took, but not very many. But we had very good cooperation and also a lot of cooperation with the commissioner and her staff and others as well. So I think this is a bill that many of us can take some pride in getting done and getting done quickly. We do believe that it will help many people in the state of Minnesota. It doesn't solve all the problems that we have, but it does address a few of the issues that people were aware of that were glaring within the constraints of the funds that were available. And we did have some constraints with that. But we appreciate the work that was done and would certainly encourage members your support on the bill. Thank you.
Senator Hanna renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2294 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give House File 2294 its third reading.
House File Number 2294, a bill for an act relating to state government making adjustments to health and human service appropriations, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2294. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill has passed and its title agreed to. Moving to the Senate addendum, the third order of business, messages from the House. The secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 2795, 418, 2690, and 2967. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to the fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. There are several printed on today's Senate addendum. They will be referred as indicated. First reading. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements. We may be actually still on motions and resolutions. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move a brief recess for purposes of appointing a conference committee.
Senator Senjum has moved a brief recess. All in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. We are in recess.
Madam Chair, is there a privileged report at the desk?
I believe there is, Senator. Secretary will report the report.
Senator Senjum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees reports that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File 1607, Senators Benson, Rest, and Higgins. House File 2958, Senators Roebling, Ingebrigtsen, Scoy. House File 2164, Senators Ingebrigtsen, Dames, Gazelka, Peterson, and DeKreif. Senate File 1143, Senators Limmer, Newman, and Hall. Senator Senjum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I really have a fabulous announcement to make. I don't know if you all know, but Senator Tom Saxog's son is part of a group called Trampled by Turtles Bluegrass Band. And not only is his son in this band, but there's also a person from my home community of Mankato, Dave Simonette, who is on the guitar and lead vocals, who is also in Trampled with Turtles. And when they were on a national tour, they got a call from the David Letterman show, and they are appearing on that program tonight. So I know you're all going to want to stay up and watch their performance on the David Letterman show. And I really, really think that you should know that their new CD, which is called Stars and Satellites, is already 32nd on the top 200 Billboard. And it's right after The Boss, right after The Boss, Bruce Springsteen's CD. So this is really quite remarkable, and I know that Senator Saxog has been, and they're from Duluth, I guess I need to include that, although I wanted to mention that there is someone from Mankato in the band. And so thank you for the point of privilege. I hope those of you who have energy left will watch them on David Letterman tonight.
Are we on announcements still?
Senator Bonoff?
Is this announcement?
Senator
I just would like to announce that it's a very big and important birthday of Senator Russ, and if you'd all join me in wishing her a happy birthday.
Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Higgins from 355 to 420, Senator Gimsey from 440 to 450. Senator Bach from 440 to 510. Senator Carlson from 555 to the end of session. Senator Perry from 540 to 6 o'clock. Senator Bach from 605 to the end. Senator Koch from 610 to the end of session. Without objection, they are excused. Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I do now move that the Senate adjourn until Wednesday, April 25th at 1 p.m. 1 p.m.
Senator Senjum has moved the Senate adjourn until Wednesday, April 25th at 1 p.m. All in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
We are adjourned.